This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guest this week is from the Raven Theater. He is the artistic director and the director of the current show, Michael Menendian. Hope I'm saying it right.
You said it perfectly.
Okay, great. Tell us about your riveting show, American Buffalo. I mean, wow. I think I mentioned to you earlier, my friend Marilyn, who comes with me to a lot of shows, very sophisticated theater person, she was shook up, literally shaking an hour after the show.
Wow.
So that's a
good compliment. That's what we want to happen.
So tell us about American Buffalo, you know, why you selected it and you know, what your vision of the show is.
Well, I've always been a fan of David Mamet's. So years ago in our old theater, we did some earlier one-act plays of his. And then in 1999, we did Glengarry Glen Ross, and we had a huge success with that show. That was a lot of fun to do.
Yes, I remember seeing that. That was tremendous.
Yeah, and we had a lot of fun doing it, too. That was the most important thing. It's like decoding. When you do David Mamet, you're kind of decoding his language, because even though he has this incredible ear for what seems like street dialogue in some of his best plays, like Glengarry and American Buffalo, it doesn't always make sense when you first read it, because you're not quite sure what they're talking about, and you're not quite sure what the stakes are, and you have to go over it a bunch of times and kind of really figure it out like a difficult crossword puzzle. And that's what attracted me to American Buffalo. Even though that play has been around for a number of years, for some reason I'd never really read the play until about a year ago. So all these years that it was done into productions, and there was a movie of it which I didn't see, and there were
miss anything on the movie.
Yeah, that's what I heard. But I knew that there were very, very powerful productions of it, from the original one to more recently, like about 5 years ago, I believe American Theater Company had done a production of it. So excuse me. I was curious by the play itself, and then when I read it, I went, oh yeah, this is the kind of Mamet play that I could really sink my teeth into, and that's what drew me to it.
Okay, this is the one that put him on the map.
Exactly. It was his first, I guess you would say, masterpiece of his handful of masterpieces. I would say this is his first one.
You know, I was talking at the reception after the opening night performance at your place, and many of the veteran critics had seen the original production, or the Goodmans a few years later. You know, they've seen some of the what a lot of people think is our definitive productions. And most of them thought yours matched up extremely well, if not as good.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, isn't that nice to hear?
Yeah, it's absolutely really nice to hear. Because, you know, the thing is that every time you do a project, whether it's a well-known script or not, you want to find as close to the ultimate truth of the story as you can, so the weight of the power of the script shines. And that's really what we were going for. And, you know, many people that I've spoken to had never seen American Buffalo. Not everyone's a rabid theater goer. Some people are casual theater goers who go a handful of times a year. And many people have said, oh, yeah, I've heard about the play, but I've never seen it. So when they see our production for the first time, they don't have anything to compare it to. And in that sense, it's kind of exciting to turn someone on to what you think is a great work of American theater, done well enough so that they go, oh, yeah, I see the power of the play.
Well, that makes sense, and it's kind of like why the musical theater houses do some of the classics every 5 to 6 years, because it's a new generation of singing.
That's right. That's
and
exactly
I think
right.
That's true among the classic dramatic plays.
And it fits right in with our mission. We specialize in American theater and oftentimes classic American theater. We've had a history of doing Arthur Miller and Edward Albee, Tennessee Williams, and certainly Mamet is arguably the finest living American playwright right now. And so he's no exception to what we like to do in terms of finding projects that really identify the American personality. When you say, what's unique of the American culture, I think American Buffalo, not just because of the title, of course, but the nature of the story of these three losers in the streets of Chicago, in the bowels of an inner city, you know, would not be, in my mind, necessarily a German story or a French story or a Dutch story, but certainly it's a classic American story.
So, and, you know, that's the other thing we were all talking about. We all knew a junk shop in our neighborhood.
Right.
I'm from Belmont and Austin area, and we had one.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We all knew a loser like Tech.
And, oh, yeah. Yes.
And a kid recovering junkie, you know, like the Bobby character.
Bobby, right.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And so, but tell us of the casting. Because I know you're the director of the show, and,
right.
And I, well, some of the great directors have told me casting is 75% of directing. But
yeah, I think that's true. I mean, of course, what you want to do is cast artists that you are comfortable with and you have a good rapport with, so that you're not spending half the rehearsal process trying to impress, or vice versa. And in this situation, one of the key things that I wanted was I wanted Brian McCaskill to play the role of Teach. Brian had been in numerous Raven productions in the past and had done Glengarry Glen Ross to great success, and he played Rich Roma in that production. And then Brian went Equity about a year ago and had been working around town. And I always wanted to work with Brian again. And so when I talked to him, I looked into the Equity guest artist contract deal, because we're a non-Equity theater, and it was something that we could afford to invest in, knowing that Brian was right for the role, and that was key to me.
I agree. I think he was fabulous in the role, yeah.
And then we looked around for Donnie. We had one particular actor in mind who ultimately could not do the role, so I was thinking about, do I have an open audition for the role of Donnie, who is a middle-aged proprietor of the junk shop? And I thought of Rich Kotowski, and I knew Rich as a friend that I'd seen around town, wasn't thoroughly familiar with his work, but knew him as a very friendly face in the theater community. And he turned out for me to be a terrific job. He came in and read and took it from there.
Well, I followed his work a lot. I mean, he's one of the fine character actors in this town.
Yes, he is.
I mean, he's totally fearless.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, that's
and
true.
And he gets it. I mean, I thought what he did with the role was perfect, because some people try and overplay that role.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, his timing, those scenes, early scenes when they're planning the burglary, with him and Brian McCaskill going back and forth in that unique machine gun sort of dialogue,
yes,
that Mamet wrote. I mean, you either do that, or you either nail it, or you don't.
Yeah,
and I really thought they both did.
Yeah, they did. They worked really hard on it. We worked really hard on going back and forth. But a lot of the rhythms, thank God, they understood intrinsically as veterans of the Chicago stage. Brian has a real love for Mamet's material and a real understanding, an innate understanding of how that kind of almost operatic character needs to fly, and he was very, very comfortable with the language from day one,
and it showed. I'll tell you, when he burst into the stage, and that when he first makes his entrance, I mean, that is one of the great entrances.
Yes,
in theater.
It is.
But I mean, just about everyone, whoa, kind of jumped out of their seat. It was pretty strong.
Yeah, I agree. I think his work is outstanding. So,
and then the third person you brought in, this
Bobby, right?
Yes. Seth Remington,
mm-hmm.
I think he's a real talent. I think he's going to be a star in this town.
Yeah, I hope so. He's a wonderful young actor to work with. And when I read the play, I kind of saw him. I'd worked with Seth on several projects at Raven Theater. So I kind of saw him as that sort of hangdog, puppy kind of guy that's eager to please his master and doesn't want to hurt him in any way. And he's a recovering heroin addict, so he's trying to go on the straight and narrow. But he's trying to go on the straight and narrow with a couple of crooks.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, for him, it's a step up to become a crook rather than a heroin addict.
So I think you've nailed the play that on one level seems like a simple play.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, that play, it gets deep.
It is. And you know what? When we look back on it, when we've talked about it together, we said, you know, ultimately it's a love story. It's a strange, twisted love story where both the roles of Bobby and Teach are like the sons who want the father to love only them and not the other person. There's not enough room for the father to love both of them. And they vie for his trust, his affections.
Plus, I think the Teach character, we've all met those
mm-hmm.
guys who can rationalize anything and justify anything.
Absolutely.
And they're so filled with rage because basically they know they're losers.
Yes, and he's at the end of his rope.
Yeah.
You can tell by the end of the play that in his confessional that, you know, he says, I'm out there every day and there's nothing out there. And you know that he is so desperate to make a score, anything that could justify his existence. Because he's absolutely run out of options.
How did you get Brian to come up with that rage? Because I've talked to him. He's a really kind of a low-key,
yeah,
nice guy. I mean,
yeah.
And for him to dig down, I mean, that really took
that's,
a lot.
That's his doing, really. I mean, we both agreed where it had to go, and then we also talked about what that rage may look like to the audience in terms of what we felt was essential. I mean, one of the things we talked about was how if Brian could do it, and not everyone can do it, and you can't do it every night, but if you can break down and ultimately cry like a child from the sheer exhaustion of it all and frustration, that's where you should go. And Brian really ran with that beautifully, I thought.
Yes, he did. And I think American Buffalo is not only a testimony to what Raven Theater does and what you do as a director, but the power of live theater. Why I'm such an advocate of, you know, movies can only do trick you so much and so
that's
many
right.
explosions and, you know, in television with the goofy little close-ups and the cuts every five seconds. You know, it can get tedious and boring. There is nothing like the stage.
I agree. If you're at a theater where you suspend your disbelief to the point where you no longer think you're at the theater, but you're actually sort of eavesdropping into another world and you're absorbed by that world 100%, that's the goal of theater. And that's ultimately the quote-unquote magic of theater, that you could transport someone from Clark Street to just this world. And not be thinking about the babysitter, not be thinking about, you know, what you're going to do tomorrow, where you're
going
to eat after the show. But you're just caught up in the story 100%. That's all you can ask for, and that's amazing.
Well, you really did it, and you guys have a history of doing that. So bring us back. Now, this is your 24th year.
Yes, we started way back in 1983, and we were, like a lot of young companies, a group of vagabond artists who had some success in a previous theater company called the New Haven Playhouse, which was one of the original storefront theaters in Lakeview. It was in the corner of Wellington and Racine. We had done three shows there, two of which were huge hits, one of which was a huge bomb. So we had the roller coaster ride of our life right out of the gate in 1982.
Well, that's kind of...
that's par for the course.
You know, it's probably... The best thing probably happened is you had the bomb after the success, because otherwise you kind of think, hey, this is easy, right?
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, we had a huge hit. Then we had a bomb. Then we had another hit. And by that time, the producer and I just did not see eye to eye on how to run the company. So we basically broke away from that company, and a group of artists and I stuck around. And we just wanted to work together. We didn't know what. We had no game plan, no real financing to speak of. And we started to do workshops together. And then we produced a show at the Victory Gardens Theater on Lincoln Avenue in their downstairs studio called Welcome to the USA, and that was two one-act plays, Tennessee Williams' 27 Wagons Full of Cotton and Murray Siskel's The Pushcart Peddlers. And they were two plays about America. And even then, we didn't have a mission statement about American theater. We just were attracted to these stories of two sides of America that you know, I thought would be juxtaposed pretty nicely. One was a comedy, and the other one, of course, is Williams' brilliant, brilliant one-act, one of my favorite plays.
Yes, it is.
So that kind of launched us, because then we were at Victory Gardens, and we went to the old Stormfield Theater that Terry McCabe used to run in Rogers Park, and then we did another play in a bookstore called Project 1999, run by a vampire. And then after that, we said, well, look, we're either going to disband the company or let's find our own home, because just running around and doing odds and ends here and there wasn't going to be profitable for us at all. And that's when we decided to convert the old post office station in Rogers Park in 1985. We were there for 15 years through 2000, where we carved a niche doing classic American theater and other works of the American stage.
Well, what I like is you guys have the chutzpah to do classic plays that many people have seen, or that were a definitive film, like A Few Good Men that you
mm-hmm.
did
a
while ago, and a lot of your Tennessee Williams. And this, most theater companies would run away from that. They'd be scared to death of it because, like, how do you top what, you know, the Goodman of doing of a Arthur Miller play or Tennessee Williams? But you guys did it and nailed it, and they have long runs, right? They get extended.
Yeah.
So
a lot of our shows run on the average about 4 months, on the average. Some of them run six.
What do you attribute that to? When most small theater companies, struggle to make it through the initial run.
Well, sometimes you need the initial run to get your audience, and if you have a good show, you'll get good audiences, but sometimes when you run it for a while, you'll get a second and third generation of audiences who meant to come and see your show. Now, we own our own space. We ran our own space in the old Rogers Park station, so we weren't beholden to others. We didn't have to close a show because another show was coming in. So
well, that's a luxury, yeah.
It's a luxury, and it's a luxury we took advantage of because a lot of times it takes you 6 to 8 weeks just to recoup your initial investment in the show. So if you can run for a while, then why not? I mean, if you spend all this energy putting it up, and we rehearse a long time. Our rehearsals, with the exception of American Buffalo, because we were under contract with the equity and had to really use our time a little more judiciously. But with other shows, we will rehearse for 12 weeks, which is a long time. Streetcar was a 12-week rehearsal.
Now that speaks to the quality.
Well,
also
speaks to the
commitment of the actors. But,
exactly.
But yeah. I know a lot of theater companies don't either can't or don't believe or don't have the faith.
Some people are not patient to do that. I remember wanting to think about an actress for a play we did last season, and she just couldn't understand why we'd want to rehearse for more than, 6 weeks, and we rehearsed 10 weeks, for that particular show. We're going to do The Seagull in the spring, and that's going to be a 4-month rehearsal process, the first month being strictly just table readings, just getting to get comfortable with the language, the characters, the relationships. And you can't, no matter how much you rehearse during the day, if you rehearsed 8 hours a day, the mind and the body need a little bit of time to absorb. We're not all geniuses who could just suddenly pick it up at a heartbeat.
Well, and also speaks to your commitment, your vision and commitment of what the final product would be. I mean, you just didn't decide 12 weeks. It became that through your experience. That,
yes.
That to reach the quality
right.
level you want to be at. Because there's nothing worse, and I see shows where you go there, and they could have been decent, but they're so under-rehearsed, and people flubbing lines and missing entrances and stuff that, you say, go back to the drawing board for a few more
weeks.
Well,
in the very, very fundamentals of acting, if you don't know your lines backwards and forwards, you cannot possibly play your character moment to moment because you're too busy thinking as the actor, what's my next line? And real live human beings never go, what's my next line? Because you're living life spontaneously, and theater is sort of the whole goal of theater is to reproduce a sense of spontaneity. And how can you have that spontaneity if you're not sure what you're doing? And sometimes you need that time to really learn what you're doing. And once you've learned it, once you've nailed it in your mind that you know this character backwards and forwards, then the lines start to take on their own life.
But, I mean, as fundamental as that is, this rehearsal process that you put your actors through, doesn't it amaze you that more theater companies don't do that?
I'm not aware of what theater companies' processes are. I know that this grew out of this realization when we did have shorter rehearsal periods in the past that we weren't ready for opening night. And you hear that a lot from people who say, oh, if we only had 2 more weeks, we only had 3 more weeks or another week. And I wanted to make sure that if we were going to run with the big dogs and we wanted to, and get off the porch, we really had to be ready, and we couldn't make excuses. You can't make an excuse for opening night. You're either ready or you're not.
I agree. And most of all the plays that I have seen that Raven has produced, I know you'd also have a rental facility here.
We do, yeah. But we also produce in the smaller theater as well as the larger, but we all oftentimes rent too.
But everything I have seen you guys do, it's as if I was in the middle of the run. You talk about ready, and that says a lot to you and to the commitment of your actors.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm glad that's reflected in the final product.
All right. And so now let's go back. So now you were at the other home for 15 years.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
And now you're in this beautiful new facility that you've been in for, 4 years now?
This is our, we opened our doors to the public in 2002. We bought the building in 2000, but it took us almost 2 years to convert it.
And this was what, a grocery store?
It was an old grocery store, the Granville Certified.
Okay, give us so people know where it's at.
Well, we're on the corner of Clark and Granville. The exact address is 6157 North Clark. We're just south of Devon. We have a parking lot at the building. We have a spacious lobby that we're sitting in right now.
Yes, it is a beautiful lobby.
And, it's very comfortable. People often, their first impression is always very positive about the comfort of the place and the physical beauty of it. It's real simple. We just gutted out the grocery store with a wonderful architect and created a 2-theater complex that is simple to maneuver around in. It's, you don't have to climb any steps. It's accessible right from the street level.
Yes, it is. And it's easy to get to. And again, parking is good.
It's 5 minutes from Lakeshore Drive.
Right.
Parking's good in the neighborhood as well as our limited
spot. I like your East Stage. It's a it's a pretty wide and long stage.
It
can
is.
Do a lot with it.
It is. It's a big stage.
Yeah.
It's we jump from our well, we have a west stage, which is a little black box, and
right.
that's what our old theater was like. It was, you know, 25 feet wide by about 20 feet deep. Our east stage now, the playing area is 35 feet wide by 30 feet deep, so it's considerably larger and probably on par with a lot of other larger professional theaters. But we didn't want to skimp on our ability to do large scale projects in it. So it's worked out well. We've done shows with like A Few Good Men had 16 characters in it. This play has 3 characters in it. So you go from something really intimate to something that covers many, many areas.
The set, and I know you do set designs too. The set for American Buffalo in the junk shop. Where did you get all of that stuff?
All from upstairs. We bought 2 things. We bought a frying pan that we didn't have for a battle scene.
Yeah.
And we bought a tool that is referred to in the script for slaughtering pigs.
Yeah, that goofy tool. That is
goofy
an actual,
tool.
What it is.
That we looked online to all kinds of farming implements and websites. And we found this. And we bought it. And that was the only other thing that we actually purchased that I can remember.
Who gets stuck with putting it back together after
well,
the
it's all upstairs. We have a second floor storage. So on a day of strike, we will have one of those old fire lines where you pass the bucket of water to the barn, and we will just pass objects upstairs and then have 2 people up there ready to put them away who know where it belongs.
Okay, so now you've been in the new facility for 4 years, and mm-hmm. obviously you bought that to upgrade, right? So you
well, what happened was we got kicked out of our other space. We were doing theater there for, like I said, about 14 years, and just a quick anecdote, one of our board members called me up one spring day in 1999 and said, "What's this I hear that Raven Theater is going to lose its home?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "Well, there's a headline in the Lerner newspaper that the Board of Education is going to buy the block of buildings you guys are in, and you guys are going to be kicked out."
Well, you didn't know.
And I didn't know. No one had said anything to us. And it was like, really? So he comes over to my house with a newspaper article, and sure enough, we're the headline that Raven Theater is going to lose its home. And that set wheels in motion, and we started to call various community leaders, the lawyers for the city, the Board of Ed, and try to figure out what's going on here. Ultimately, to make a long story short, we hooked up with Alderman Patrick O'Connor. He's the 40th ward alderman whose ward abuts where our old theater was. And of the various political leaders, community leaders we spoke to, he was the one person that felt that he could help us find a new home. And without his support, we wouldn't be here. He helped us to gain access to some state funding, some city TIF funding. We did major fundraisers of our own. We looked around up and down Clark Street. This building became available for sale in like January of 2000, and we spent the next 11 months negotiating the building and trying to line up the funding. And with Alderman O'Connor's enormous assistance, we were able to purchase the building and the parking lot and convert it into the 2-theater complex that we have.
Well, it's another story about how the political power in Chicago loves theater. I know the mayor did so
That's
much
absolutely true.
For downtown, but
That's
it's nice
true.
To hear. I've heard other stories like that.
Yeah,
That's
and
good.
Alderman O'Connor, you know, he was a visionary. We're in a corner of Clark Street that is still in the stages of development. We're just north of Andersonville, which is a wonderful gentrified neighborhood of sorts with cute little shops and restaurants, and we're just off the beaten path.
Yeah, this is an up-and-coming area. Yeah, this is a nice area for a theater. So that's a great story. So 11 months to rehab the place.
No, it took us 11 months to buy it, and then it took us another 22 months to rehab with rezoning, development, architect's plans, permits with the city. We had all kinds of headaches with this process, and we were following the letter of the law with wages, with prevailing wages, with all the things we had to do. We had to fill out all kinds of forms with the City of Chicago's TIF agreement, with the State of Illinois, Illinois First, one of the last things that they were funding before the collapse of the government. Sort of, they didn't really collapse, but that program
pretty close,
ended,
yeah. That program ended.
So we really, you know, we really did pay our dues. We had at one point the Carpenters Union was striking the property because we hired carpenters who were non-union, but we were paying them union wages as we were allowed to do with our city agreement. But for some reason, the carpenters were really upset about that, even though there were only 4 people who were non-union carpenters. Everybody else was union in the building. But for 1 month, we had to shut down construction while our lawyers negotiated with the union lawyers to allow us back in to continue to build the theater.
Wow. So that's a testimony to you guys' commitment to your mission and what you wanted to do.
Yeah. If it could go wrong, it did go wrong. And we had, just because we had an alderman who was working closely with us, by no means did we have any special favoritism with the city. As a matter of fact, if nothing else, we were even more by the book to make sure that the permits were accurate, the drawings were right. And every time we opened a wall, the city said, oh, you got to put this in, you got to put that in. So the budget was growing. Whenever you think you know what the answer is, double it, triple it. It's going to take three times as long, and it's going to cost you three times as much money as you think it's going to cost you.
But by the smile on your face, it was worth it.
Oh, it's totally worth it. Yeah.
So if you're advising young theater groups, just be careful and watch what you're doing. But
well, the key is if you know what you want and you want to go after it, be nice about it, but don't take no for an answer. I mean, just keep hammering away, and you'll find a solution as long as you're not alienating the people around you,
All right, so you opened this place in 02.
That's right, in the summer of 02.
What was your first show here?
Marvin's Room, okay. Scott McPherson.
Yeah, that was a terrific production.
And then we followed that with Golden Boy.
Yes, which was one of the best. I've seen that three times,
and
I think you have the best production of that.
Thanks. That was a huge success.
Yeah, that ran a long time, didn't it?
Yes, it did. That ran about 4 or 5 months. As did Marvin's Room. Marvin's Room was our first show, and we thought we were opening in the spring. That got delayed to the summer. It got delayed to the end of the summer, so we rehearsed that show off. We took 6 weeks off because we thought we were opening earlier than we were, so that was a special show for us.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we did Streetcar two falls ago.
Yeah, Streetcar. Again, that's another one of those shows that kudos to you for the chutzpah to do that. Because a lot of people are scared to death of that show.
Yeah, but these are great scripts.
Yeah,
and ultimately, you should strive to want to do great material so that the fault will be yours if you don't meet it. Nobody can blame the artistic choice you made. So in that way, if you pick a great script and if you don't rise to that occasion, then maybe you're not worthy.
But if you are, you're introducing it to a new generation.
That's right.
And to those of us who have seen these are like icons to us.
And maybe we find a fresh interpretation that you might not have seen otherwise, Dancing Lunasa, we had a great time with. That was right after Streetcar.
Yes, it was.
And and that was one of my most favorite shows to work on, a wonderful cast.
That is a great show, too. Isn't it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. So, we've been busy here. We've had our hits. We've had our misses. We're still finding new audiences. We've tripled our potential seating. So we are growing into that.
All right, how do you deal with the dilemma that some theater groups have where they're striving for a subscription audience,
mm-hmm.
which then, if you give them four plays, you got to give them four plays.
Right.
So
right.
Now if you have a hit in between there, you have
yes.
that. How do you balance that with when you have a hit show that everyone wants to see that has legs? How do you
balance
that?
Strip down our subscription to the absolute bare bones, and we offer a flex pass. Basically, it's so simple. It's $50 for a pass. It's like a bus pass. You get to see any two East Stage shows, any two West Stage shows, anytime, and it never expires.
Wow, that's
and that's
excellent.
All it is. All you get, it's just subject to availability.
Mm-hmm.
So, so as far as you call and there's a seat open for you, and you have your flex pass, you bring it in. We punch the hole for the one you've used up. When you use up your card, you buy another one. And without expiration dates, we never had to worry that we had to get so many shows in before the end of the year. If we only got three shows in 1 year, that's okay, because your subscription doesn't end until you use up your fourth punch.
Well, that's the answer to that dilemma.
Yeah, it doesn't get any simpler, and people buy passes all the time. I mean, we have several hundred subscribers, not thousands, mm-hmm. and if we had a larger staff, we could probably massage that more, but we've always wanted to keep some flexibility and try and, ride a success long enough to put a little bit of money back in the bank before we start again,
Yes, that makes sense. And your West facility, the smaller, the studio mm-hmm. facility, mm-hmm. that's also a rental.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we closed the exonerated yesterday, yeah. and we opened today, and Dog and Pony came in this morning. When they're done, the day after they're done, Brown Couch Theater comes in, so we just keep it going, which is good.
Yeah, that makes sense. How about your are they strictly Raven productions on the East?
Yeah, so far.
So far.
Yes. Yeah, we might. We've looked into the possibility of in the summer when we're dark, we might rent out the East Theater. We've done that. There have been one day rentals and monthly rentals in the larger theater, but not full run productions.
Okay, let me ask you the question that I ask every artistic director. What are your favorite shows that you've done through the years? I mean, there's many you're proud of. You've won. Well, how many? Give us an idea how many Jeff citations you've won. I see plaques all over the place here.
Well, I don't know as far as the company, the total amount. We've won twice for production. That was A View from the Bridge and Streetcar. We've won several for direction and
that was you winning
design.
For direction, right?
Yeah, yeah. And we've won some actor awards, really good ones. Liz Fletcher recently had won for Blanche DuBois and Streetcar. Mike View has been in several shows with us. He won for A View from the Bridge and Streetcar. But we've had our share. We've won After Dark Awards, which we also respect quite a bit. So we've had our share of them. My favorite shows have been not necessarily because of any awards or even official recognition, but just that they worked so well for me artistically. Death of a Salesman has always been my favorite play, and we did a production that ran for 6 months at our old theater that to this day I just really look back on very fondly. We did The Crucible was Arthur Miller's first hit. Arthur Miller's probably, along with Tennessee Williams, the two playwrights we've produced the most, and The Crucible ran for 6 months. It was a wonderful success for us. And I really enjoyed working on that. He wrote a lesser-known play, A Memory of Two Mondays, that had a very nice little run for us. And it's a beautiful one-act play.
I did not see that. I hope you do it again.
Yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful story. We also had great success with A View from the Bridge. That was our last show in our old space. So we went out with a bang. That ran for 6 months. We took it to California, to a seaside resort in Northern California. We performed it there for a week. And had the best vacation of my life doing that. So that was a fond memory for me. I think Marvin's Room, because it inaugurated our space. It's a lovely story by Scott McPherson, a Chicago playwright who's no longer with us, of course. And that has fond memories as well. But I've enjoyed a lot of them. Another play is Cobb by Lee Blessing. This great story about Ty Cobb that I really enjoyed
working
on.
Did not see that. How
long
ago did you do that?
That was in 1993, I want to say.
Hey, it's about due for a revival.
Yeah, I really like that story because it's all about the three ages of Cobb dealing with the whole issue of the black-white relationship in baseball and how Cobb was a real SOB when he played.
Oh, yeah, he was a nasty guy.
He was a nasty guy. He was a racist at heart and held no punches at all. But the play is written with great clarity and a lot of power.
You ought to consider doing that again for a new generation.
Yeah, yeah, we might. I think it's a great script.
What is the future for Raven Theater? Like, for example, I know within your mission, are you guys ever going to do a musical, for example?
People ask us that
all
the
time. I mean, Timeline, you know, they did Fiorello and they nailed it.
Yeah, that's what I heard. You know, we may. I never say no. More and more people ask us about that. Our background is not musical theater, although some of the people in our company are very gifted musically. So I can't say never, but I haven't gotten that in my sights yet. But I will say that our theater, in enjoying doing American classics, I've always wanted to do world classics myself as a director. And I'm not the kind of director that has been out there peddling my resume. I've pretty much focused on running the Raven Theater, running my family, and keeping things above water here. And so I've come to the decision that I'm not getting any younger, and there are plays by Henrik Ibsen and Anton Chekhov and this guy named William Shakespeare that I've always really, really wanted to do. And I thought, well, why can't Raven venture into global classics, world classics? It doesn't have to be pigeonholed. I know that sometimes the media and the public will pigeonhole you because that's what you do best.
But if they know you can nail those, I mean, I could see you doing Shakespeare. I used to say that if Shakespeare isn't done by Chicago Shakespeare Navy Pier, you know, in small storefronts, it ought to carry a warning sign because, you know, some of those groups, it's just totally over their head.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
with the track record that Raven Theater has for nailing tough plays to do, I don't see any problem with you guys doing Shakespeare.
Well, The Seagull is in our sights for the spring. We're going to do that by Anton Chekhov, of course. Macbeth is scheduled for us to do in the fall. I'm not sure if we're going to do it 100%, but that's our target date is the fall of 07. for Fort Macbeth. Somewhere down the road, I've read a wonderful translation of Hedda Gabler that I think is just incredibly intense and right up our alley. So I'm going to be looking into that a little bit more closely, too.
Wow.
But we'll go back to Williams and Miller. Incident at Vichy is a play that I find to be fascinating and would love to explore that one some more. And maybe very timely now in this paranoid society that we live in, where everyone's being watched and looking over their shoulders.
How about original works?
We develop new works throughout the year in our smaller theater. We have a workshop series. Out of that, we will produce them in our smaller theater from time to time. We just did last summer a Chicago comedy called Diner Tales. There were two new comedies.
Yeah,
Chicago playwright.
I just couldn't fit that in. I wanted to get over there.
It was fun. Okay. It was fun, and we developed that a year earlier in our workshop series. And we're constantly doing that. We've done several projects that were originals. One of our directors adapted Ernest Hemingway short stories into an evening called A Clean, Well-Lighted Place, and that was a huge success for us, adapting a lot of the stories that took place in various train stations in Europe. Mm-hmm. She put it all in one cafe just outside a train station.
Yeah, that worked.
Yeah.
That was
I thought that was really nice. Yeah. That's our commitment to developing new works, new voices. And hopefully one day out of that, we might find something that would grow and maybe move into our larger theater for an extended run. That would be nice to be able to do that.
Yes.
It's hard to stumble upon a Glengarry Glen Ross or a Death of a Salesman, you know. It's not like when you read the scripts that there are too many gems out there. Otherwise, it would be too easy.
I interviewed Ed Sobel from the First Look Project at Steppenwolf, and they read 500 plays. And he actually reads at least a summation of all 500. And
wow.
He said it's – yeah – he says he reads himself blind. And, you know, they come up with some decent stuff that are in development, but they still haven't come up with that gem.
That masterpiece, the next masterpiece. Yeah. You wonder how can you develop a relationship with certain writers or find that, because we don't have the staff to read the 500 scripts. So we get them in and we distribute them to directors who want to direct in the workshop series, but it's an arduous process.
Yeah. But
you know, I mean,
kudos to you for getting involved in it at all, because a lot of theater companies either produce original works that are, you know, inbred in their theater group.
Right.
Which usually is the kiss of death, in my view, you know.
Yeah.
Because there's no one to tell them this isn't a good play, you know.
Right.
So it's good that you do get involved in that.
And it's important too. We don't risk all of our eggs in that basket, but we certainly put a lot of energy into developing new works as much as we can.
Well, that's great. Well, congratulations on Raven Theater.
Thanks.
You guys are one of the best regional theaters around.
Oh, I really appreciate
that. When I send people up here, I get lots of emails back, and I should forward some to you, but about thanks for that recommendation.
Oh, great.
Like my friend who got shook up with seeing American Buffalo. she's already sent four or five of her group from her one of these clubs she's in. She was telling them how shook up she got, how good the play was. And they go, wow. And they all know she's a pretty tough lady.
Yeah.
They go, man, this shook you up. I got to go see that.
Oh, great.
And I think this weekend there's a whole group coming.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, Word of mouth is so important to us. Yeah. You can't buy that kind of advertising.
Yeah, that's true. And I see the big smile. It's got to make you feel good when you see people really get that shook up at a play that's supposed to do that to them.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's the key, is that you hope that they don't treat it lightly, you know. Because it's a powerful story. It's a sad indictment of us.
In about the last minute or so we have left, now is your commercial. Tell us where they can get tickets, the phone number, and what days it's running.
Well, our phone number is 773-338-2177. You can call for reservations and information. If we're not answering the phone right away, we've got a voicemail and we get back very quickly. RavenTheater.com is our website. We spell theater the old-fashioned English way, T-R-E at the end. So it's RavenTheater.com. You can go into our website and you can navigate through it to find out more about our shows.
What days is it?
It runs Fridays and Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 3. Right now it's scheduled through December 3rd.
Do you anticipate it might...
We'll see. I'm looking at the next couple of weeks closely to see how the word of mouth and advertising brings in the audiences. We'd like to, and the actors are willing to, so we've got a lot of things in place, but you don't want to waste people's time if you don't fully, you know, realize the audience you want to. But this is a powerful story, and it's an important one, so I hope that the audiences will catch on.
Well, if you really want to see intense theater, and you really want to see theater that'll reach you, and in a beautifully worded play, and I Some people say, how can you say Mammoth, who uses, you know, a few mm-hmm. little dirty words here okay. and there. But it's lyrical. It is really one of his masterpieces.
It is. And we you know, oddly enough, we chose to have the main character, Donnie, listen to opera. And we thought that was kind of fun to put that in.
Yeah.
There's something very operatic about the story, and he's a little bit of an opera buff in the story just by having it on the radio when the show starts.
Yeah, that's true. And I think throughout, there's a couple of scenes there where it comes in, it fits it. Well, you should be proud of the show, and I know it was Jeff recommended.
Yes.
Which is cool. And I, you know, I have a feeling that you may get an award out of it. I mean, it's in award territory. It's that kind of
caliber. That's kind of you. Yeah. I mean, I would rather know that we're going to get audiences out of it.
Yeah, but it's nice to win an award, too.
Yeah, it's always good to get recognition, no matter who you are or what you're doing.
So what's the show following this?
It's going to be, we're going to have another show in our studio, the smaller West Theater, at the end of January. We haven't announced it yet because we haven't quite narrowed it down.
Okay.
We got it down to like pretty much a script that we know we want to do. But then after that, in late March, we open with The Seagull by Anton Chekhov.
It's a great play.
Oh, it is. It's a beautiful story.
It is, and I know you'll nail it like you have all the rest. So, folks, get out to Raven Theater. And this Raven Theater is one of the theater groups that doesn't make any difference what the show is. If it's a Raven show, come and see it because you're going to get a good night of theater. And that's how I define the excellent theater companies, where you can just go and, oh, what's the show? Because that's how I pick coming to your show. You know, I know that... You know, if you're opening versus a lot of other theaters, you're on my list that, you know I'm going to see a good piece of theater and an important one. So I make sure I'm there.
Great.
Well, keep up the good work.
Thank you. It was
thank
a pleasure
you.
To be here.
Thank you. And folks, just remember, go see a play this week. Thank you.